George Kritikos here to talk to you about the Player Rater podcast. Along with co-host Ryan McDowell, we leverage the DLF player valuation tools and help inform you on your dynasty roster strategies. Whether you're joining a new startup, rebuilding a team, or maybe you're just not quite at contention level yet, we help you understand player values and how to really drive your team forward as dynasty owners. Tune in and enjoy the show.
You're at the dynasty crossroads that film and analytics create. The dynasty crossroads that film and analytics create. Peter crunches numbers and Jake just grinds that tape.
Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. I'm Peter Howard, PA Howdy on Twitter, the single, solitary, and lonely co-host of this here fine DLF podcast. This is part two of an interview I did with Ray G, Dre Garvin, or Ray GQ on Twitter, host of DLF's Devi podcast. We split it into different sections because we ended up having a long and what I thought was fairly interesting conversation that I didn't want to reduce down to just 30 minutes. So instead I've separated it into separate parts. This is part two, and we left off in part one talking about Henry Ruggs and how I thought his production indicated at this point in early pre-draft process that he probably wouldn't be a great fantasy asset because he'd never dominated in college. So I'm going to jump right back in there where I get right back to it. So thanks for coming back to the crossroads, and let's jump right back into it. Thanks. Like, I don't think he'll ever have a top 24 season, if you want me to put a cap on it, just from what I know right now.
And what else would you need to know in order to adjust that stance? If he gets drafted in the first round, how much does that change how you view him?
If we've got to play that theory, we've got to play the rest of that out. If he goes in the first round, he's going to rise because draft capital means a lot. It means opportunity. But then he's going to look like Kevin White, okay. Laquan Treadwell. In fact, he's going to look worse than those guys. He's going to look like a guy who's going to get thrown opportunity because he was overdrafted. But, and like I did a live stream today, and I say, you know, it's ridiculous to just take the one thing and then throw a player out. If he gets drafted in the first round, I'm going to be fine with his ADP rising. I'm going to be fine with him being one of the first wide receivers off the board. But I am going to be more nervous to draft him. And if, and to play the whole thing out, if Tyler Johnson gets drafted in the second round and he's in the first round and they're back-to-back in ADP and I'm on the clock and I can't trade back, I'm going to lead Tyler Johnson. I guess that's what, you know, it's difficult to play the theory.
No, that's fair. And I wanted to challenge that. And by the way, even though I don't have him ranked 19th, I am a little bit lower on Henry Ruggs. I had high hopes for him coming into 2019, but I am concerned that he was at times the third or fourth option on that team. And the fact that he didn't hit those thresholds and what data and history tells us, I've never heard it said like that, but if he is drafted in round one, if he's Laquan Treadwell or Michael Floyd or one of those guys like that, I'm
see, Michael Floyd actually looked pretty good.
Did he look good?
He looked okay. Again, that's why it's ridiculous just to ignore the fact. If the NFL thinks he's great, if a team is willing to reach on him, if the film says great things, then, you know, you can't argue with his ADP rising if he gets first round draft capital. You just can't, because that means something. And there's more, there's the things that aren't being counted that I can't look at, which is a gray area. Like, if everything was counted, like, and he still looked bad, then
I'll say this,
like, it's not all counted.
I don't think, based off of what I've seen out of Henry Ruggs for 3 years at Alabama, I have zero confidence that he could be a wide receiver one for an NFL team, just based off of what I've seen. And that's without looking at the data, any of that. I have no confidence that he can be a top 12 top 12 wide receiver finish, period. 24, I don't know. I've got my concerns there as well.
Okay, so we basically agree we hate Henry Ruggs. I don't know what all the comeuppance is about. Like, why doesn't everyone? Now, let's get to why you do actually like him. I guess I should allow, you know,
I mean, he's,
that he does do something good. Like, what's he doing that makes him rise for you? Even though, like you said, he's not earning receptions of the top three guys. He's not producing yards, and his overall stinky.
Well,
I'm sure he's a wonderful human being, is going to be great in the NFL. I just don't think fantasy.
I think he may be a better real NFL asset than he is a fantasy football asset. He's not a volume receiver. He's a big play guy, right? And I think a lot of times, I know for me, we're looking for the next Tyreek Hill. We want that guy. And I think we should probably be more mindful of chasing that outlier. He is fast. It's no thought about it. He is fast. He's very fast. And he's physical-ish. But he's athletic as hell. He can go get 50-50 balls. He can jump up, but he's fast. That's the Henry Ruggs claim to fame. He's not a volume guy. He's not this route running savant. He's not this great. He's just fast. He's faster than everybody else, and we're chasing that. We're chasing the allure of Tyreek Hill.
Weird.
Probably not good process. I get it. I understand it.
So is that really why people like him?
He just looks really good. I'm not being funny. Like that's it. He's going to the early betting odds are he's going to break the John Ross record or push for breaking that record at the combine.
Oh wow! Okay, I had no idea. But I'm glad to convince you to take him out.
Yes, I'm moving him down.
That's great. Yeah, that's the trail I mean. And I think production is better. Like, everyone wants to talk in terms of perspective of hits. Who's going to hit? Who's going to be great? And I love that, don't get me wrong. But it's almost easier to see the guys that don't fit the model. It's almost easier to see the more likely busts than it is the more likely hits. Like, all these players get better over time. Players that get talked about so much because people are watching them, they're obviously doing stuff that's impressive, right? This many people can't be wrong, but... Then you get to the first round draft capital and you see Laquan Tremwell and Kevin White, or even, you know, I'm trying to think of some other names here. Philip Dorsett, but no one really likes Philip Dorsett. Breshad Perryman, and they just look like sore thumbs in the group of first round prospects that did well. They just stand out as players that, for the one thing that most players seem to do before they're good in the NFL, which is be good in college compared to their teammates, that's percentage, and that's what market share is, they just stick out a little bit. So we'll have to see what the draft brings, I guess. I had something there.
Well, can I ask you about the teammate thing? I talked to you about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Tell me about this teammate score metric. I know you don't have one per se, but there are people out there that say there should be some adjustments for if a player plays on a team where you had X number of players hit a certain, like, what is this teammate score that I keep hearing about? What is this?
All right, from the top, teammate score, the idea behind it, and I guess people might call it different things. I always make up my own names that I think sound cool and then no one likes them, so I'm guessing other people do too. But the idea is that you grade who they're playing with, so if they're playing in the Big 12, it's different than if they're playing the SEC or, you know, the ACC. I'm just reading a list here. I really don't know college or what other conferences there are that exist. So Pac-12, is that a thing? And beyond that, if you, like you were saying with Henry Ruggs, if you're playing on a team with, you know, three DeAndre Hopkins, then it's reasonable to expect it's harder to earn. And that's fair. It's a fair logical conclusion. I just have never got there because I haven't seen it in the data, so I haven't made the story. But it is a fair story, a logical story on the face of it. Now, so the idea is you rate that. You rate who they're playing with, their competition level, and then you make a teammate score. So, you know, I don't know any that I've tested don't work well. I've tried draft capital. So you look at the draft capital of all the players that they've played with during their time. You kind of add it up. You create a number out of it, and then you grade it, right? This guy was playing against better competition because these guys were drafted earlier. And then you adjust production for that because it's harder to produce with more stiff competition. The problem with it is, like I say, the ones I've looked at and the one I tried to make didn't work. It didn't increase how many players we got right or wrong. And that goes back to sample sizes. Like I was saying, the only outlier I really admit to, or the only person I would call a very clear outlier to, you know, the general rules that I use, is Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas played in Ohio. I think that's a team in a conference. That's all I know about it. But famously, apparently, everyone tells me now that Ohio is a team that doesn't pass a lot. Well, that doesn't matter because we're using the percentage of the team yards. So if they pass for 200 yards or 7,000, it's just about how much of it was hit. But every year, he was under the average, and not just under the average of successful players, under the average of average players for his team. Now, there is no doubt Michael Thomas is one of the best in the NFL right now at the wide receiver position. And that's one of the things, you know, every player plays different. But, like, there's no way to see it in production. He did break out. He was better than Henry fucking Ruggs. But he looked bad. He looked like a Laquan Treadwell. He looked like these guys that aren't good. In fact, a little lower than some of those names that I've been throwing out. So, yeah, that's... You could call it a clear miss, or, as I do, he's just a clear outlier. Now, people like Tyreek Hill, Wes Welker, even Andre Johnson, these other names people like to throw out, there's always something that I think would have adjusted our expectations. Like, Michael Thomas played four years in college. He didn't miss a lot of games. There was no reason that he shouldn't have produced since he was that good compared to the average. But Tyreek Hill could barely get on the field. He changed college teams, I think, three times. Was in a community college. Like, we could understand, okay, this guy was barely on the... That's why he doesn't have numbers. Wes Welker played running back. Julian Edelman played quarterback. Andre Johnson played outside of my sample size, if I remember right. Vincent Jackson only played 1 year of Division II ball, if I remember right. There's always something that you could look at to say that it would be unreasonable to... We just don't know. That doesn't mean they're good. But we wouldn't know, so we wouldn't ding them so hard. Michael Thomas is the only one I can point to that has none of those questions about, and clearly production just didn't tell us he was good. Now, the reason I'm going through all of that is why I don't have a teammate score and why I don't think one would work, and while it makes really logical sense to complain about the competition, is it happens really rarely that you get these good NFL players playing on the same college team. It does happen. But I can only name three or four instances off the top of my head. If we dig harder, we could probably, you know, maybe we could increase it to 20 if we increase, you know, the level of player we want. Maybe Cole Beasley played with someone who's pretty good in the NFL, kind of a thing. But, like, all my other samples, all my other conclusions are based on, you know, every player drafted since 2000. So they're not great sample sizes, but they're a lot bigger. So with so few examples, any rule you make is going to be highly prone to variance. Because when you're just looking at one example, everyone understands this, that one example is not going to compare to anyone else. It's an entirely individual example. You need more than one example. And when you can only pull together five examples, any teammate score you're going to get is going to struggle. What it's going to do is discount players who are really good. And when you just look at it straight, and it's going to improve other players who are really bad because you're adjusting them down, and it's going to pull in all this noise to the sample because the adjustments you can make, just there's not enough data to make them. Now, having said that, sorry, this is long, but like the Breakout Finder says they have a teammate score they use in their model, and the Breakout Finder is a really good app. It's a really good product. It's a really good model, and probably a lot better than the ones I have. Like, I'm not a statistician. These guys are professionals with websites and teams. What the fuck do I know? But I can't find how they're doing it, and that's as much as I know. Like, the Breakout Finder says they can. So I, you know, they're not fucking lying. They test their data better than I test mine. But I can't see a way of doing it. I can't see how it could work. But I think you'd have to have a lot more time, have a team to adjust it on individual players. Like, for Henry Ruggs, you do it, but you don't do it for, you know, wide receiver X that no one's ever heard of. Like, you'd have to go through individually and adjust when you know or you... The tape tells us that a play is good, and that way maybe it could work. But I'm not. I'm just one guy with a spreadsheet out here with a dream. I'm not going to be able to make those kind of high level, well funded kind of adjustments. And that's where someone like me like goes to Zach Reed, or he goes to you, or he goes to someone else who can bring in some other variables that we can't test. But you've got a great eye. You've done a lot of work. You can tell us more. And used to adjust it. And to be fair, that's why, like, I took Michael Thomas at 1.7 in his draft numerous times in that rookie year. Despite everything I said, him being an outlier, everyone said he was good. I loved everything I heard out of the kid's mouth. Mm-hmm. And when he went there and all those stories about him, you know, meeting up with Drew Brees and saying, I'm going to work, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can adjust for it as long as you're not, you know, a malicious. As long as you understand, and this is what I tell everyone, like, you don't have to like the numbers that I like. But look at some evidence, look at a history, find out where what it can tell you, where it, what it can't, what it got wrong, what it got right, and then at least you know what you've got.
Right.
And then make up your own theories, make up your own story. And as long as you're doing that, I mean, that's the best we can do, I think.
Yeah.
Because we're not all well-funded, you know, companies. And the best we can do is understand what information we have and the limitations of it. And so that's what I try and do.
Okay.
But that's what teammate score is, and that's why I don't have one, because I can't figure out a way of making it work. It's a little like per-game dominator that way, by the way. Like, I tested college dominator, which isn't great, but it's useful. It's very descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
And some people like doing per game dominator to try and not miss on DK Metcalf, basically.
Right.
You know, he didn't play a lot, but he was very dominant in the few games he played.
Right.
But again, I wrote that article for FS Statistics, which is now, you know, part of DLF, so I guess it's not there anymore. But what it ended up doing when I looked at what it did to the samples of players, when you filtered by per the game or you filtered by straight college dominator, the names that came into the sample as good players, it brought in players that were bad that were getting adjusted because we were doing per game. They were just bad. They weren't productive and they weren't good in the NFL. And then it was downgrading good players by making their production look less because they were really productive over a whole season, but they played all 16 games, so they weren't getting an adjustment up, so it brought them down. And it just it put all this noise in the sample just for the sake of grabbing these one or two outliers, like DK Metcalf maybe. We don't know that yet, but maybe. And, you know, it's a long way to go just not to miss on
right,
Michael Thomas.
Right.
Like, when there's one guy you're just trying to get into the top area of your ranks, like, if everything else is looking good, why fuck with it? Like, I'm okay missing on those few guys. Like, Terry McLaurin looks like he's one who's going to be another outlier, to be fair. But I'm okay. Not okay. Like, I want to get it right by listening to more information. But I'm okay with production missing on a few, but getting the majority right, or at least getting me closer to who the guys that I want are, rather than adjusting fucking
right,
everything for the sake of those few and then maybe missing on some of the guys who would have got right anyway. Like, you miss Stefon Diggs and T.Y. Hilton if you're too busy looking at the guys that are higher drafted and were underproductive and you're worried about sorting out which ones actually turned out to be good. Like, that's what this has done. It got us. It's not even the first round picks. It's T.Y. Hilton, it's Stefon Diggs, it's Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
It's these guys that are further down, that are less cheap. Those are the guys I'm mostly searching for. I'm not even worried about the first round players. I'll take the consensus, right, whatever. But it's the guys that drop into that. You can take anyone you want. You know, in your second and your third random rookie drafts, you pretty much, it's the Wild West. You take who you like, right? And I'd rather be swinging for the Stefon Diggs, Tyreek Hill with less draft capital but production, than just out there swinging left and right, just desperately trying to find the next Terry McLaurin. Because there's almost a player like Tyreek Hill, Stefon Diggs, every year there's some guy who's lower drafted that no one really mentions or likes that much. Maybe some do. But he was really productive, and he lands in a decent situation, and he looks good by numbers like what I've been talking about. And those guys I'm searching for. But this year so far isn't working out. Those guys were Andy okay. Isabella.
I know you.
And they were J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So, and Terry McLaurin hit. So maybe we don't get those guys
on
the outliers.
What about Deontay Johnson from Pittsburgh? Did your model like him?
Yeah, it looked good. He looked good,
yeah,
especially for his draft capital. And that's the way I've taken to looking at it. Like, if he was, what, he was
fourth round. I think he was fourth round. So. Yeah.
No. I actually, you know, I didn't mention him a lot last year because everyone liked him because they were using the Pittsburgh rule, and that's not something that's not the way I look
right,
at things, right? Not this team dress good. Well, it's interesting, but I don't know, that's weird. But he did show out. Like, he was more productive than Henry Ruggs, just to throw a name out there for you. But he looked good. He broke out at age 21, which was a little later, so I didn't mind getting him in the third round, but I wasn't pushing for him in the second there. I was looking for Andy Isabella, to be honest with you, who, you know, I still have a lot of hope for. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, though, I'm worried about, man. Just to take us out of rookies here for a second, what did you think of his first year? He was barely on the field, but did you see him play a lot?
I didn't see him play a lot, and I was not in love with his Stanford tape. I was not on board with that guy all draft season. Yeah, my model.
He was a little touchdown dependent, which makes me worried. Like, he looked good in Dominator, but not in MS Yards there. But he was still, you know, he was on the average. But he seems to be more of a touchdown guy, and he didn't get a lot of that this year. Is there any other wide receivers you want to highlight? Like, you don't think everyone will be on them?
Yes. But... Yes. Antonio Gandy-Golden. And I know you mentioned him with your top five, but I've got some questions for you, Peter. I've got some questions for you because I like him too. He passes my eye test. I like his size. I like what I've seen from him. But he played at Liberty. I expect him to dominate.
That lower
competition I expect
level.
Him to dominate. If he didn't go out there and command 90% of the market share and 90% of the touchdowns, I mean, I know it's not that high. I'm being facetious. But if he didn't dominate Liberty in the competition that he faced, that's somebody I really wouldn't expect to do it. So not only did he dominate from a number standpoint, he passes the eye test, but there are people out there who say he played at Liberty. And, you know, those receivers, the level of competition, draft capital, whatever you want to say, what are your thoughts on somebody like a Gandy-Golden?
It's really weird this is all falling into a similar conversation because, you know, I literally do no planning for this. Anyone who's been here can attest that we just start talking. But that's exactly what we're talking about, right? I don't know of a way to adjust, but it does seem very fair. But he did do what you would expect a good player to do on Liberty, like you said. And I guess that's as much as we can say. Now, mostly with these players... I play at a slightly easier competition level, according to people that watch fucking college, and do what we expect good players to do at lower competition level. Let me just skim across it. I will say I only have 2 years. I assume he played at an easier conference level first. Do you know that?
I don't know where he was prior to...
Yeah, I assume he played before he was 20 years old. But that to me indicates a player who stepped up in competition and still dominated. I think that's a positive thing too. But mostly with these players, I assume, and what normally happens is draft capital sorts them out a little bit. He's not going to be drafted in the first two rounds. Sometimes it happens and it's a little tilting because he's going to be more highly valued. Like the step to the NFL is going to be harder for him. We've definitely seen that. Like even Adam Thielen took 2 years before he really was able to do anything and he was coming from a lower competition level. So we can expect that. But like I said, he did what you would expect a good player to do at a lower conference. He just utterly dominated. So I guess that's what I'd say with him. I think he's going to be lower drafted, and that's going to put him at a better value range that I want to take a swing on. He's the kind of guy I'll be drafting over Henry Ruggs, with assumed draft capital included, you know? Just because he was productive when he got where he played. But yeah, it's really interesting. One pet theory I have, and I haven't, again, it's something I like, but I haven't found anything to, like, put a number to, so this is, like, one of the stories I give into. I'm always complaining about other people's stories, but do you think draft capital can be negative? Like, some players, they need to be drafted later. Like, I still think if Philip Dorsett was drafted a little later, he might have been able to do a little more. And he's been a good NFL player, but not a fantasy player, you know?
What's the story behind that? Like, what is your theory behind that and why?
Well, it's just a few little trends that I've noticed. Like, wide receivers drafted in the first round that don't break out in the first 3 years, they tend never to break out. But wide receivers with less draft capital sometimes break out in year four, sometimes break out in year five or year six. Undrafted free agents famously but it's something that I looked at. Like, their potential breakout curve happens later than people drafted in the first three rounds. Like, you can hang on to them a little longer, hang on to hope, maybe, because they typically break out. Their average breakout year is further along in their NFL career than players drafted rounds 1 to 3. And it's just a few little things like that that make me think. And Mike Williams is perhaps another good name to put on this. Like, I liked him. Then he got injured. He came back not the same player, which makes perfect sense. Like, that guy was almost crippled by that injury. Like, it's not like, oh, he was underproductive. It's like, yeah, you'd expect. But because I saw that, I wondered if it's going to take him a while before he is what he was. Like, he, I think at one point he was expected not to walk again. Like,
he broke his neck. He broke his neck. I mean, yeah.
Literally. And in the NFL, he was drafted in the first round, and I kind of hated that because of my pet theory. Like, I liked him at age 19, and then this injury, and he's not the same guy. And I just worried that when you draft a player in the first three rounds, if he doesn't break out year 1 to 3, they tend not to break out. And I worried he would need that longer curve. Because he's coming back from... And then in the first year in the NFL, he got injured again. Mm-hmm. Different injury, but still. And he actually had one... And last year, he wasn't bad. He's been more of a touchdown guy. But he's had an impressive college NFL career so far, I think, compared to most. But not, you know, great for fantasy, but okay. And it just made me think, like, if this guy was drafted in the second round, expectations wouldn't have been as high as earlier. And so my pet theory is, when an NFL team drafts you that high, they want rookies to prove it. They want them to earn their place on the squad. They're not going to throw them opportunity. But if you're a first-round pick, you are going to get deferential treatment. But you're also going to get deferential criticism, almost. Like, by year three, you're not doing anything. We paid you $1 million or whatever it is. Like, stop giving him the ball. Stop giving him the ball. Or, what? Or, you know, that's a story. It's completely fictional. But just based on a few little things I noticed, I wonder if that's true. Or something like that is true. Now, Devontae Parker is an exception to that rule. Something that disproves it. But, like, Miami Dolphins are weird when it comes to wide receivers. And they kept believing in him. And this is all story. All story, not analytics. And they kept saying he was good in practice. And it's just not turning up on the field. And he kept getting that opportunity. So he might be an exception to the rule rather than something that disproves it, if you know what I mean. So, I don't know. Like, some players, I don't think I can identify which ones all the time. But some players, I think, might benefit from not having such high expectations.
100%. I think that is the reason, though. I think that is the reason. If you're drafted in the first round, the expectation is I need production. They, you know, sooner rather than later. Opposed to, I know this is the absolute worst example to use right now, and Antonio Brown, who was picked in the fifth round or sixth round, whatever he was picked in, and he starts out on special teams and he shows a little bit on punt return and he's a situational role player on offense, and then he continues to keep grinding away, and then that talent prevails, and then he's, you know, all pro NFL wide receiver. So I don't think you're off, because Ted Ginn was picked. I think Ted Ginn was picked by the Dolphins in the top 10 some years ago, and it just didn't work out for him in Miami. That pressure to be that number one, they kept trying to force it, and it did not happen. So I don't think you're off with this one at all.
It does put him in, and the other thing is, it does players break out less often the less draft capital they have. That's why it has more signal than any one single thing. So it's not like I want them to be undrafted or I want them to be a sixth-round pick. Like, Antonio Brown's like the only sixth-round pick to break out, let alone ever do...
Right.
You know, he's only one of the only players to do what he's done by any measure. So that's a little hard. And I'm not saying he wouldn't have been great if he drafted... If someone noticed the obvious traits that he definitely had and drafted him in the third, I'm not saying he wouldn't have broken out. But, like... You know, life's funny and history's funny as well. And especially when we're dreaming of predicting the future, like, there's a million doors in front of you and there's one path. There's one path for all of these guys to follow. And they don't even know, you know, you're walking with a blindfold. And if you put a foot wrong, you end up on one of those trajectories for your future, that alternative dimensions where you're not a good NFL player. So, like, that's why it's not predictive. It's not something I'm going to wait in a model or anything. But I do wonder about it. So when I look at someone like Gandy Golden, fun name, great, productive in college, played at a lower competition. I do like that he probably stepped up in competition and handled it well, like dominated the first year he played again in the higher level, like Kenny Golladay did that. But I hope he's not a day one, day two pick.
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, I'm cutting off part two right here. Have you noticed what's happened? Ray is better than me in so many ways, but including at podcasting. This has become him interviewing me on my podcast. I don't know how I let that happen. I shouldn't. I've got a man on the show that's played college football. He played with Danny Woodhead. He knows Jalen Reagor personally. and he's interviewing me. God, I'm bad at this. But I just, at this point, it's probably pretty noticeable that both of us have pretty much forgotten we're recording. We're just having a conversation. And Ray is way too easy to talk to. But again, I want to stress here, Ray is someone you should check out. Go check out the DDP. Did it again. He's got a deep knowledge of football, an actual experience with football, and a knowledge of players on a level that I'll never have. So if you take nothing else from this podcast, it's that you should go listen to Ray more. Or for the first time, maybe. Hopefully not. Hopefully if you know Ray, if you know me, you definitely have already listened to Ray. Hopefully that's the case. Anyway, I'm cutting off part two here to keep it towards that 30-minute mark. And we will see you again in part three when we talk more about KJ Hamler and also get into some really interesting conversations about how to form opinions and how we try to develop them as well. All right. See you in part three. Thanks again for coming to Crossroads. Bye.
Yeah, chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so, Jake on the table going Nate on the plays, so, Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical, picking my nose, don't really know if I like that, picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that, picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, stick out that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table going Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table going Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.